The Guardian.
Okay. Quiet, Jamie. I'm doing the intro. Unless you want to sing. Do you want to sing Match of the Day?
Okay.
Go on then. Get to come here.
You ready?
Ready.
Da 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 da.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Lockdown, Episode 1, the Sid Lowe Special. Like pretty much all of you, I'm in my house, Barry's in his house, and for however long this lasts, our podders will be in their houses too. Today, we just thought we'd ring Sid up and find out about him. We know him as a disembodied voice from Spain with a dog and a garage full of ham, but is there any more to the man? You've sent loads of questions, so we'll ask him them. We'll round up the latest football news, there isn't a lot, and we've got your reaction to Chapter 1 of Detective Wilson, and back due to popular demand, well, if we're honest, for my own personal pleasure, Barry Reid's song lyrics. All that on today's Guardian Football Weekly. Okay, so this is how we're going to do it. Barry and I are going to start the pod and then we'll introduce guests as they come in. So I'm in my, what I call the studio, or what my wife calls the studio. Barry, you're in, where are you, in your bedroom?
I am in my bedroom, yes, Max. You're seeing where it all goes down, or doesn't, as the case has more recently been. It's got... Sex Pistols, Anarchy in the UK print on one wall, several wardrobes with all my clothes in them, many of which don't fit me anymore, but that's soon going to change. And then it's got a rug I bought in India just so I could escape from a shop on the floor. I literally didn't want it, but the guy was giving me such a hard sell that I ended up, he wore me down and I bought it. And then when it arrived, I ended up having to pay about 70 quid duty on it, import duty. So I, every time I see that rug, I just hate myself and it. And then there's the bed and, you know, my robe hanging on the back of the door, couple of bath towels. It's pretty uninteresting as bedrooms go. No mirror on the ceiling, no sort of sex toys or anything. Yeah, very dull.
How are you getting on, Barry?
I'm getting on pretty okay, I have to say. I think house arrest agrees with me. I've been watching a fair bit of TV when I'm not working. And then in my trip around the exercise yard yesterday, I did a 4.5 mile walk, which took in an entire perimeter of Clapham Common. And I have to say, I think the penny has finally started to drop with people. Everyone was behaving themselves. And I literally mean everyone without exception. I didn't see anyone flouting the rules or guidelines as laid down by the government. And then on the way, at one point, actually, I passed, there were three cyclists who were having a rest, and they were having a conversation. But they were all sort of a Richard Osman apart, which seems to be the standard unit of measurement for these, people keeping their distance. And then on the way home, I popped into a big supermarket in Clapham Common on the off chance, and they had toilet paper. So I got some and I delivered that to my elderly neighbour, Rupert, who I look after from time to time. We kept our distance. There was at least a Richard Osman between us. And for those who don't know, by the way, Richard Osman is a quiz show host and multi-bazillionaire who's about 6'7". Then I went home and now I'm here with you.
You sent me a text in the week, Barry, that said, I weighed myself this morning. It'll be interesting to see the difference when this shit is over. Could go either way. I'm full of good intentions, but also drinking a can of lunch lager. Listeners will be pleased to know that at 9:14 a.m., you have a cigarette in your hand. And I don't often see you smoking during the pod.
Yeah, I think the last time I smoked during a podcast was at Euro 2008 in Vienna. with your predecessor when we were recording in a pub, the Gusher Beer, what was it called? The Gusher Beer House, something like that. I can't remember, but yeah, we were recording in a room upstairs that had lots of antlers sticking out of the wall.
This is from Gutman, who says, I hope the pod gets round to Barry's flat to fit in with technical help. I always have the impression that Barry's is like Marlowe's office in the Maltese Falcon, old beat up typewriter, bottle of empty scotch, Barry with his tie in a mess, quote, okay, Rushton, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. Is that an accurate reflection, would you say, of Barry Towers?
No, my flat's actually very tidy, and I don't drink top shelf generally as a rule, so I don't have any spirits or scotch of any kind in my house. How are you getting on?
Me? Yeah, I'm having it. I mean, the thing is, because I've been going into TalkSport, where we are a public service broadcaster. I mean, essential worker is arguable, I guess, but I've been going in there, so I've been outside, I guess, more than probably most people. And I mean, I don't really want to see that many people anyway. The only difference I've found is that my parents just email me another link for another way of digital contact, another one where when they're on camera, and I'm sure lots of people have found this, they just can't get both their heads anywhere near the middle of the screen. So you get my dad's chest and the top of my mum's head or something. And all they do is say, this is clever, isn't it? And you never actually get around to any conversation. But look, so far it's sort of been okay, isn't it? I mean, we've had lots of messages from people. Behan says, look, thanks for doing this, soothing and uplifting, a slice of near normality in this surreal time. And like, we appreciate those nice messages, and we don't want to get all too, arguably this pod is not the most important part of combating COVID-19, but hopefully we can be a vaguely interesting bit of fun for people, I guess, twice a week.
That's the plan.
That's the plan, isn't it? You keep a cigarette count going.
Interestingly, actually.
Yeah, is it interesting?
Probably not. But because of the location of Barry's chair in the studio, I always have my back to producer Jonathan, so I can never see him waving his hands or sighing or rolling his eyes. But he's on the left of my screen here now. I'm wondering if now he's rubbing his face in exasperation. I'm just wondering, should I cover that half of the screen just to make it more realistic?
Well, he won't be able to do this sort of arms outstretched, like appealing for a penalty, staring straight at me when you say something which clearly isn't going to make the edit. So I have to do some sort of clever pickup so you don't notice that he's annoyed with what you've said. So maybe we'll get the all new clean Barry in these troubled times. Right, let me give you the latest updates. Australia have now suspended the A-League. They were trying to get through enough of the rest of the season to figure out the important parts, the title, the Champions League qualification, the relegation. They haven't managed it. Interestingly, I interviewed Adam Lafondra, who plays for Sydney FC, and they're top of the league. And he scored and applauded the fans in an empty stadium. There were none there. And he also, you know, before the game, he was saying to the lads, we've got to quieten the crowd first, and then we can get on with it. But they've stopped their football, which is seems to be the right decision. The PFA has called for an urgent meeting with the Premier League and the EFL to discuss the financial impact of coronavirus. On Tuesday, Birmingham City became the first Championship club to take a pay cut. Players who earn more than £6,000 a week have been asked to accept a 50% pay cut for the next 4 months by the club. As with other industries, this is a quote, the crisis is having severe impact on the finances of the game. Several clubs have already approached players with a view to imposing pay deferrals. In order to deal with this situation, we've called for an urgent meeting with both the Premier League and the EFL to discuss how we might proceed going forward. That's the PFA. League 2 Forest Green Rovers are using the government's wage support scheme to keep paying staff. Earlier this month, the EFL announced it would release a £50 million short-term relief fund to help clubs. In Europe, Germany kind of taking the lead. Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund have asked players to take pay cuts to help other employees at the club financially during the coronavirus crisis. Players at Union Berlin, 11th in the Bundesliga, announced they'll go entirely without their wages. Last week, Borussia Mönchengladbach's players were the first in the country to offer to forego wages. Bayern players will take a 20% cut, while Dortmund players will waive part of their salaries. And in Coronas non-positivity corner, Mike Ashley taking the lead again. He's been criticised by fans after a number of supporters were charged for their next season ticket despite the ongoing suspension of the Premier League. Newcastle United Supporters Trust has called on the club to suspend scheduled payments during this incredibly difficult time. Some fans were charged £620 on Wednesday. This is NUST. The club stated it has no intention of freezing or delaying payments, both for those that pay annually and monthly. Newcastle United can still act now and provide much needed support and relief for their fans that are in financial difficulty due to this global emergency. Apparently the supporters affected were warned in advance that the payment would be taken, and it was the usual payment schedule for those who were on long-term price freeze packages. Newcastle have declined to comment. This comes off the back, Barry, of Mike Ashley trying to keep Sports Direct open to claim it was an essential service.
Yeah, Mike Ashley and Tim Martin, the owner of the Wetherspoons pub chain, have really covered themselves in glory in this time of crisis. And I suppose we're seeing the very best of people and the very worst of people, aren't we, at this time? And it would have been a surprise for either of them to have done something nice, put it that way, without being forced. I think Tim Martin basically told his staff to go and work for Tesco or Sainsbury's or any other supermarket if they wanted. They're treated very badly. Personally, I wouldn't say I spend too much of my time in Sports Direct or Wetherspoons, but I certainly will never darken the doorstep of either establishments again. And I think a lot of people would be of the same opinion.
All right, Barry, we're going to end part one and talk to Sid next. Are you excited to learn about Sid Lowe? Is there anything you don't know about Sid Lowe?
There is a lot about Sid I don't know, to be honest. I'll tell you what I do know, and then we see what we can find out. I know he's mates with Sean Ingle, who's daddy of the pod. I think they went to university together. And I have met Sid's parents briefly. I've met his wife briefly. I've met his son briefly. And that is it. Oh, and I know he has a dog called Estella. And obviously he's brilliant at what he does. But whether or not pulling the curtain back and letting us have a peep at various podcasters is a good idea remains to be seen in my mind. But we shall see.
We shall see. And if you wanted to know, Barry, when you got your first eye roll from producer Jonathan criticising the first idea we've had, was that. But we admire your honesty, Baz. That's why you're here. And we'll find out if it is interesting. And hopefully, Barry hasn't convinced you this is a terrible idea of what we're just about to do on this very podcast. Back in a sec. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly, the Sid Lowe special. And for that, we need a Sid Lowe. And I can see him, and I can never normally see him on my screen, but there you are. Hey, Sid.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. You've got some very nice artwork in the background there.
These are by the current Mrs. Rushton. Barry, earlier in the pod, described them as mould on the wall.
That would be harsh.
I would like to say, in my defence, that when I described them as mould on the wall, I couldn't see the nice skyscape with the tree on the right because there was some sort of computer technology box blocking the view. I could only see the one over your right shoulder.
That does indeed, yeah, look a bit like mould on the wall. That's true. It looks like the water's coming through from a leak somewhere.
My wife is a primary school teacher and we got the goldfish, so they're also behind me. There are four goldfish: Anthony, Orange, Lord Sugar, and who's the other one? I've forgotten the fourth fish. I'll find out from my wife when she gets back from her allotted walk.
Fishy McFish, is it?
It's not Fishy McFish face, no. Hamish says, is this Sid's full pod debut? Is this your full debut,
Sid? What do you mean by full debut? No, I've been on some live pods with you, haven't I? And I did actually do one at Guardian Towers.
Like, how are you, Sid? Because you've been locked down for how long now?
We started on, what day is it today? Is it Thursday?
Thursday.
So nearly 2 weeks. We started on, no, hang on, it must be more than two. Didn't we start on the 11th of March and today's the 26th? Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so we're 2 weeks. But that doesn't feel right because we started on a Saturday. But anyway, nearly 2 weeks or whatever it is.
And how is it? Because we're on day two, day three. So I think a lot of us obviously it means different things to different people, but are finding it kind of okay for now. We're still allowed out for a walk and or exercise.
Well, that's part of it, isn't it? That the rules are slightly different. So what happened here was that the first day before the actual lockdown happened, so you had the first day when schools were closed. The next day when they realised that all the school kids were just going to the parks, they closed all the parks. And then the day after that, when they realised that all the school kids who were going to school and then were going to the park, then started just basically hanging around on what's, I suppose you call it, a scrubland, a kind of a heathland near us. They closed that as well, all recreational area. And then I think the day after that, or 2 days after that, was when the state of alarm was announced, and then it was proper lockdown. So people aren't allowed to go out. And in fact, they've started even reducing some of the exceptions. So one of the exceptions, of course, was having a dog. Now they're saying that dog cannot get more than 200 metres from your house.
Ouch.
And how are you, like, personally, how are you finding it?
I mean, sort of more or less all right. I think the kind of the structure of the day is getting weakened probably by the day. So, you know, we're trying to keep it so that there is a sense of you get up and you do things and you try and, because obviously we're still doing quite a lot of work, even though we're not being allowed out. So I'm still relatively busy. I must admit, though, I'm getting a little bit bored of watching kids' films. I'd quite like to have some control of my telly.
And Sid, how is Estella coping with not being able to go for a decent walk?
Well, the thing is, to be perfectly honest, she doesn't walk particularly well anymore now anyway. So she limps a little bit. So she's a pain, because you take her out and you think, here we go, it's my passport to freedom. And she stops and she sits on the road and says, right, can we go back in now? And you go, no, come on, walk around the block. Please walk around the block.
I had one skateboard for her.
Exactly. I had one a few days ago, which is actually genuinely a little bit frightening, because she was sort of getting a bit frantic in the house. I thought, okay, we'll take you out, thinking she would do what she normally does, which is walk outside, walk sort of 30, 40 metres away, do her business and then come back. And she walked out of the house and she just kept walking. And so I was just walking and walking and walking and walking after thinking, she's never, ever going to stop. Something really is wrong. And in the end, I had to force her to turn around and come back, because I think I'd gone beyond my 200 metres stipulation. But she was all right.
All right. Well, it was basically, I think people want to know how you ended up in Spain, Sid. You know, how did you end up doing this?
Well, you see, I was on a flight to Singapore and it took a wrong turn in the air. Right. I mean, I did, this really is going back. Obviously, I did Spanish at school. I did Spanish at A-level, and my degree was in history and Spanish. And so the third year of that degree, because obviously whenever you do a language, they make you do an extra year, and your third year is abroad. So my third year of that degree was in Spain, in Oviedo, which is why Oviedo are my team in Spain. Then I came back and I did a master's, which I couldn't get funding for. So I had to do it part-time in return for some teaching at Barnsley College. So I did a part-time master's, which meant doing quite a bit of time spent in Madrid, because of course it was a history master's. So there was obviously the archives and the libraries and so on are in Spain if you're doing Spanish history, and then did a PhD. And that PhD brought me back to Spain for what's supposedly known as the year in the field, which is, I think, your second year of a PhD, although let's face it, a PhD becomes so long that it could be any year of a PhD. I did that second year in Madrid, again, because the newspaper resources and archives and stuff like that are mostly based in Madrid, although I was traveling around Spain quite a lot. And then at the end of that year, and I was already doing some football journalism, just kind of decided, well, you know what? Basically, the idea now is that you go back to write the PhD. Well, I can write it just as well from here. And so stayed for another year, at which point David Beckham arrived, and at which point the balance between PhD and journalism kind of definitively went towards football writing. And so then basically haven't left since. And I think it came in 2001 for that second time. The year in Oviedo was 96, 97. And all I've done now is display how bloody old I am.
So presumably, like, you loved football, though, from growing up?
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, obviously. I mean, that's Baz may well know this. The reason why I started writing for The Guardian is all the fault of Sean Ingle, because Sean was at what was at that stage known as Football Unlimited, I believe. And Sean was one of the people running Football Unlimited. And it was when The Guardian decided they wanted to do European football. And I knew Sean from university. You see, it's all about who you know. It's a complete con. I've wangled my way in through what do you call it if it's not actually family, but it's sort of nepotism? racism. Anyway, that kind of thing.
The Spanish describe that. Jobs for the boys.
That's what it is. The Spanish describe it as enchufes, which is a plug, because you are literally plugged in, you see. So I had an enchufe, which was Sean. Sean asked me as they were doing, I think, He Who Shall Not Be Named was doing Italian football columns. There was a French column, there was a German column, and I was asked, would I like to have a go at the Spanish column? And either they quite liked it or didn't hate it enough to actually get rid of me. And sort of that's where it started.
So Sid, like, where did you grow up and who did you support?
Well, I'm probably only prepared to tell you half of the answer to that question. I grew up in North London, and all of my friends, all of them, the ones that are kind of mates from school, are all Spurs fans, all of them, but I'm not.
If I said my idols were Hoddle and Sheringham and Dion Dublin, who would yours have been?
That you've asked the same question. Yeah. But you're essentially asking me to out myself here, aren't
I? I am. We're in lockdown now. Yeah, no one's going to see each other again.
No one can get around my house and beat me up for this and have a go at me for being a mid-80s glory hunter from North London whose idol was Kenny Dalglish.
So do you still... presumably the further away you are from something and the less... contact you have with it, I suppose the passion goes a bit, I guess.
Of course it does, a little bit, yeah.
So your sort of your love for Liverpool that you had in the mid-80s is not the same now, right?
Oh, it can't be the same, just because you don't see as many games, because you don't get to as many games, and obviously being a North London glory hunter, I got to a lot of games in London, but not very many in Liverpool. And once you come out here, then even less so. Also, I guess the other thing is that I don't know if this actually applies for everybody there, but I imagine it probably applies for quite a lot of us, is that once you're writing about football, it's sort of a bit different anyway. It does slightly change, or at least I think it does. I don't know, maybe it doesn't for you lot, but I think it changes it a little bit, yeah.
And do you think you'd ever come back? We think you are Spanish football correspondent now and forever.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, but I suspect that if I did, I should probably use the royal we here, because obviously it's not just down to me anymore. If we did, I guess it would probably be driven more by personal reasons than anything else. But then by nature of anything, you need a job. And if I went back to England and I wasn't writing about Spanish football, then obviously my job prospects would be significantly weaker.
Did you ever finish the PhD?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
You kind of, like myself, fell ass backwards into this job. Do you ever think, I could be doing something a little bit more worthwhile?
What could possibly be more worthwhile than what we're doing? See, I think now in Spain, and presumably this has happened in England as well, in Spain there's now actually a list of what's known as essential services during lockdown, right? The kind of people who are allowed to do things. And it occurred to me that people like us entertaining the masses, we are the most essential of essential services. So I now feel vitally important, Baz, in a way that I once didn't. Yeah, I did finish the PhD. Essentially, after the balance had tipped towards football more than history, there was a point basically at which I got a call from university that ran along the lines of, so where's this PhD then? And essentially I was put on a deadline, and we all know how much we love deadlines. I was put on a deadline that essentially said, look, if you don't do this in the next 6 months, that's it. And genuinely, I did contemplate just not doing it. I thought, well, it kind of doesn't matter now. My job is elsewhere. I'm doing other things. I don't need this PhD. And then I thought about it a bit and thought, well, but I've invested a lot of time and a lot of work into this. So I decided, yeah, I am going to do it. And in a kind of foreshadowing of the current situation, for those 4 or 5 months, I literally did not leave the house getting the PhD written. So maybe that's what I need now. I should do another PhD or something.
What was the title again?
Well, the title of the PhD itself, I think, was just the name of the movement I studied, which is Juventud de Acción Popular, and the date. The book version of it, because obviously it got published, but like most academic books, is unfortunately not cheap, is called Catholicism, War and the Foundation of Francoism in Spain.
Which obviously leads you on to covering El Clasico.
Well, here's the thing, right? So and I didn't know this before I started researching this, and I discovered this. Essentially the PhD, to cut a very long story short, and obviously PhDs are a very long story.
You could read the whole thing. You've got time.
Shall we do that? That would be a real bonus for everybody. The whole series of questions that the PhD seeks to ask, like the social base of the Franco regime, the causes of the civil war, the real nature of fascism in Spain back end of the Second Republic and into the Civil War and so on. But essentially, it's about a right-wing youth movement which kind of bridged the what you might describe as the gap, but a part of the argument is that there isn't so much of a gap between the supposedly parliamentary right and the fascistic right. Anyway, that youth movement, being a youth movement, had a series of people in different roles, one of which was the head of sport. They had someone who kind of looked after their sports department. And that was Santiago Bernabéu. So the segue into football is perfect. And I didn't know that when I started researching it.
Okay, back to the beginning. The first game you ever watched, Sid?
You know, I don't know this for sure, but I think it was QPR Leicester. I've got two older brothers. One is a Manchester United fan, one is a QPR fan. I've got a younger sister who's a Sheffield Wednesday fan. My dad was a Crewe fan. He has now renounced his Crewdom because of everything that happened, to the extent of writing a letter to the chairman and urging him to resign, saying that he would never go to Gresty Road again. Weirdly enough, I dreamt about Gresty Road last night and I don't really know why. Anyway, sorry, I've gone off on a tangent.
My wife dreamt about Barry last night, Sid, so I think this is doing a lot of...
Well, I was pleased to dream about Gresty Road because it was the only time in 3 years I haven't dreamt about Barry. So I'm quite pleased, especially after Barry revealed his bookshelf, and I'm now completely disturbed by dreaming about Barry. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, so the first game, I think, because my older brother's QPR fan, but I'm not completely sure about this, I think it was Leicester against QPR, and I think Gary Lineker was in that Leicester team.
Oh, right, the Lineker-Alan Smith partnership up front. And did you, like, fall in love with football just like that? Was it sticker books and all that stuff?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. This is another one that, again, I wanted to be a QPR fan like my older brother. So this is where I try and now justify the disgrace that is being a mid-80s glory hunter. I wanted to be a QPR fan like him. He's how much older than me is he? He is 6 years older than me, I think, maybe seven. And he wouldn't let me. Which I look back on this, I think this is completely ridiculous. Surely if you're an older brother, the idea of a younger brother liking your team and sort of turning him into a kind of a mini servant of your team is surely a good idea. Anyway, he wouldn't let me. And so the reason that I ended up where I ended up, and actually he really could have screwed me over on that instead of, you know, just on all the other things he screwed me over on. I just said, all right, then, well, who plays in red? And he gave me a list of red teams and I chose one. I could have ended up supporting someone significantly worse.
To Spain, then, can you pick out, I don't know if there's one highlight or just a couple of amazing highlights from the games you must have seen in Spain?
That's a good question. Well, I mean, the year I spent in Oviedo, so Oviedo at that time were a first division team. And that year, 96-97, was the year that Bobby Robson was at Barcelona and the year that Brazilian Ronaldo was at Barcelona. And Brazilian Ronaldo, I think, was 19 at the time and had come from Holland. And to be perfectly honest, I knew nothing about him. I genuinely have never, ever had a season where a single player had an impact like Brazilian Ronaldo had that year. I mean, he was just off the scale. I mean, you know, look, objectively, is Messi better? Yes, Messi's better than Brazilian Ronaldo was, but not least because he's more consistent. But I've never had kind of an individual season go, bloody hell, this guy is unbelievable. And I kept trying to see him play and never managed to that year. Went away to Gijon to watch him play and he wasn't playing. Went to games in, where else did I try and go? Well, I'd missed the game in Oviedo. We arrived in Oviedo just after Barcelona had left, which incidentally is the first day that Pep Guardiola met Juan Malillo, who was Oviedo manager at the time, and Malillo became one of his mentors. And so that season, in terms of just kind of impact, Brazilian Ronaldo, obviously from my point of view, because I became an Oviedo fan by virtue of living in Oviedo, that year Oviedo beat Atletico Madrid 4-1. And that was the Atletico Madrid, the team that had just come off the back of winning the derby. And that was just unbelievable. And the best thing about that really was that, obviously, you know, you go to Oviedo, there was a very small group of us who were mates, who were English fans and did, you know, work quite hard at breaking through the English group and getting Spanish mates and stuff as well, which with me particularly happened from playing football with a local team. But that night, Oviedo beat Atletico 4-1. It was a Saturday night. And it felt like the entire stadium just turned around and together went down to town. And town was kind of downhill. So it felt like everyone kind of rolled into town and just the night went on. And that was completely brilliant. As an Oviedo fan, I went to the two derbies. The first derby away at Sporting Gijón, when I said I was going, mate said to me, wear a workman's helmet. and you discover why when on the way to the ground they're chucking things at you. And genuinely, quite a lot of Oviedo fans had gone in workman's helmets. I didn't get one and then realised why it wasn't such a good idea. I went to the second derby, Oviedo against Sporting Gijón in Oviedo, in a wheelchair because by then I'd broken my leg, but I managed to get a ticket and go as a wheelchair user, which was a lot of fun. So those are probably the ones that really stand out kind of on a personal level. And then I suppose from a working point of view, having returned to Spain and come to Madrid, the Copa del Rey final, which was actually put on Spanish TV last night when Deportivo beat Real Madrid on Real Madrid's 100th birthday in the Santiago Bernabeu to win the Copa del Rey, and the whole of the North End full of Depor fans, the rest of the stadium empty, and the Depor fans were all singing happy birthday to you, which was pretty special. Obviously some of the Clásicos have been fantastic as well, and I've been in some weird games. So I've been in a couple of games behind closed doors, and I was in the two Real Madrid Real Sociedad games when, with 6 minutes to go, the game was abandoned because of a bomb scare, and we all turned and ran out the stadium and everyone left, and the players were literally sitting on the pavement outside on one side of the stadium because they'd been told to vacate the stadium as well. And then they made us all come back, obviously, to play the last 6 minutes, and Real Madrid needed to score. And so, of course, they'd had this tactic of how do you get a goal in 6 minutes? And basically they went full Wimbledon, and they did get it as well.
Sid, is football your only sport?
Well, it's the only sport I play. Well, I don't play it anymore because I've been told not to. When I was young, you know, when I was kind of 15, 16, 17, I ran a lot. I ran competitively. I played a bit of tennis, but wasn't very good at it. Although I always loved Boris Becker, but that might be just my age, because in 86, which is probably the greatest year of all time, 86, I think, was the year that he won Wimbledon, or was it 87? And you know, obviously he was, what was he, 18 at the time, throwing himself about the court. And the idea of someone being a lunatic and throwing themselves about the court quite appealed to me. I obviously used to watch a little bit of cricket, but I would never exaggerate that, being in the UK. But yeah, no, fundamentally, it's really just football. I was a qualified basketball coach briefly, but that slipped away. Only that for, you know, whatever the lowest level of basketball coaching is. But I did have a EBBA license in basketball coaching.
What is the lowest level? Bounce it and throw it.
I don't honestly know. I mean, I assume it was just called level one, but I honestly can't remember. But yeah, bounce the ball and throw it in that round thing.
Double dribble, Sid.
Yes.
Got some questions here. Michael says, any new books on the horizon from Sid?
Well, now would be the time, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
No, I mean, to be honest, when I finished Fear and Loathing, I would have gladly shot myself rather than write another book. I don't know if this is the case with everyone. I don't know if it's because I chose a very stupid subject, which is to basically pick the two biggest clubs in the world and write their history. Maybe I bit off significantly more than I could chew. And it won't surprise anyone who's ever subbed me at The Guardian that the original version of that book was at least twice as long as it was supposed to be. there's genuinely about 90,000 unpublished words from that book. So I suppose I could just do them, you know, the director's cut at some stage. Although there is a reason why subs cut you, and it's not always just to piss us off, even though we like to claim that. And we love to hide behind the subs and pretend it's all their fault when most of the time it's ours. So since then I've been involved in a couple of books, but they haven't been mine, if you see what I mean. So one's been a ghostwritten book, and the other's been a book where I've kind of ghostwritten, stroke edited, stroke translated. But a book of my own, yeah, there's a couple of ideas in the back of my mind. But right now, I was going to say right now is not the time. Now is the time. But I'm not sure I really want to go down that rabbit hole again, because genuinely writing a book is a pain in the arse.
Question from someone called Jacob Steinberg, who says, who does Thid like more out of Barcelona and Real Madrid? Also, who does he think is better out of Messi and Ronaldo? Please kindly answer both.
Jacob, we already knew he was evil. We now really know he's evil. The answer to the Messi-Ronaldo question is Messi. In terms of talent and so on, but I think what Ronaldo has achieved is just extraordinary, and in many ways I think Ronaldo is massively, massively admirable. In terms of Madrid and Barcelona, I don't have an answer to that in the way that people in Spain do, which is that there's an inbuilt preference for one or the other. My preference of those two, in so much as there is a preference at all, because most of the time there really isn't, really kind of depends on moments. So you know, obviously I really, really, genuinely did enjoy seeing Gareth Bale score that winning goal for Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey final. But there have been moments when you know Barcelona have had players that I've either really liked or really enjoyed watching. I really liked watching Luis Suarez and was really pleased when Luis Suarez scored in the 2015 Champions League final, for example. So it sounds like a cop out, and it sounds like I'm sitting on the fence, which obviously I am doing as well. But there genuinely isn't an answer to that question.
Sam says, can Sid make a ham palace out of his hams? Christian, has Sid out of desperation already started talking football with the ham?
No, I haven't started talking football with the hams. I think, not that I'm suggesting that you are, you know, making it up or anything, Max. I think the ham thing may have been slightly exaggerated. I think right now there are only two hams in the garage. In fact, it might even only be one. The most recent one I got, I did actually look at it the other day and thought, you know what, if we really do go into full lockdown, that is my kind of break glass in emergency moment, isn't it? There is a leg of ham in a thing, and I haven't actually started on it yet, but I worry that cutting ham is genuinely an art, and there are competitions for ham cutting in Spain, and I suspect I would do it so badly that it would ruin the whole point of the ham. And I was planning to take it to the butchers, because you can take a leg of ham to a butcher's and get them cut it for you and then kind of vacuum pack it, and you just pay them a fee. I don't know how much it is, 10 euros or 20 euros or something. And then obviously you've got ham for quite a long time. I can't go to a butcher's to do that now. They are not considered essential services. And I certainly think if I was walking down the road with a leg of pig over my shoulders, the other pigs would probably stop me and say, "Oi, where are you going?" And so I worry that if and when I do start on this ham, I'll make a mess of it and it'll actually be pretty much inedible.
All right, Sid. Well, look, that'll do for part two. Will you stick around for part three, which is just any other business and some other questions?
I will do, yeah.
Excellent news. I will be back in a sec. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Sid Lowe special. On to Positivity Corner. Barry, did you enjoy seeing Jose Mourinho volunteering with Age UK, delivering essential goods to the elderly in Enfield with his mask on?
Fair play to him. I mean, I'm a big critic of his, but it was good of him to do that. He didn't look as if he was having the time of his life or anything, but, you know, I'd take my hat off to anyone who does their bit.
Watford have offered the NHS the use of Vicarage Road during the crisis as a venue for training, childcare and storage. Pep Guardiola has donated €1 million to a campaign launched by the Angel Soler Daniel Foundation and Medical College of Barcelona, who are helping the effort against the virus in Spain by purchasing medical equipment. Brighton have promised to donate 1,000 tickets to NHS workers for future matches when football resumes. The chief exec and deputy chairman, Paul Barber, hopes other senior clubs in the UK will adopt similar schemes. Bournemouth chairman Jeff Mostyn has already pledged to match the offer. They've been joined by League Two Grimsby, who will donate 50 tickets to healthcare professionals per league game next season. And Soccer Aid has been postponed. I don't know if that should be in positive. Now, it does raise lots of money, doesn't it, for UNICEF. Maybe I'm just bitter that I never, even at the height of my absolute Z-list fame and footballing ability, I never got asked. I remember, I must have told this story, that I was at some charity golf day with the exec producer of Soccer Aid. And I just said, look, I've got a Ukrainian granny. I'll play for the rest of the world. I don't care. But we've got 18 holes together, so just give me one hole and I'll pitch on that hole why I should play, and then otherwise we won't talk of it, because otherwise you'll have a terrible round of golf. And he just said, just got off the phone to Hernan Crespo. So I was like, all right, don't worry about it, mate. Let's go on to feedback from last pod. On the subject of stanchions, which got a lot of traction, thanks to Lollipop, who sent us Clive Allen banging one in for Palace against Coventry in 1980 that bounced straight out and they played on. But it wasn't the loop stanchion, which is the perfect one, the ball can nestle in. It was just the sort of hard wire, sort of classic Highbury stanchion that bounced out. And then Ruinart sent an amazing clip, which I'll tweet out. At 1:10 into this YouTube clip, Scottish referee Les Mottram misses Dundee United player Paddy Connolly booting the ball in, and then disregards the fact that the Partick defender catches the ball and hands it to the goalkeeper just because they've definitely conceded a goal. And he just says, crack on, lads. It wouldn't be so bad, he says, but that referee was Scotland's official FIFA referee. It's so good. Lots of reaction to chapter one of Detective Wilson. Peter says, have you watched, is it Haji Giri? The writer of that, Joe Barton, has a suggestion. He's asked the question, what would be your top tips to budding screenwriters? And he says this, just write loads. It's the only way to get better. Everyone says you should read lots of scripts. Personally, I'd rather read almost anything than a screenplay. They're a bleeping nightmare. He says, you could probably learn more about language from reading Barney Ronay writing about football in The Guardian than probably 90% of the TV scripts out there, including mine. So there you go. Well done to Barney for just being annoyingly good.
Well, then, if that was the case, every screenplay or every movie would have just a random badger wearing a waistcoat and a monocle wandering across the screen.
Martin has a theory of Detective Wilson. He says, I'm hoping they'll need assistance from Interpol and bring Lars and Philippe in that way. There'll be a twist. Sam Diss isn't dead, but working with Bielsa to frame Wilson for murder to stop Wilson talking about Bielsa's revolutionary tactics. We will do a Twitter poll over the weekend for Chapter 2. It's either Enter the Bear. Barry is the bear, so that sounds terrible. Or The Great Escape.
oh, dearie me.
Listen, so it's been great. And Jamie Biddle, who's written it, is we thank him so much. And I also love the fact that producer Jonathan rang Sam Diss before he published to say, just in case you're listening to this, you get murdered in this podcast. I hope that's okay. Sam seemed pretty cool with it. Thanks to everyone who got involved with watching England-Argentina 86. We got loads of comments below the line. Some people still very angry with Maradona. Some completely furious with our review of that game. Lots of people pointing out that Mark Wright had broken his leg before the tournament, so couldn't play at centre-back, and maybe that changed things. But there was a really nice line from Low Cost, who quoted an Italian journalist on Maradona's second goal, saying England looked like a tourist who just had his wallet stolen. Now, Monday's game that we're going to watch at Saturday at 3 p.m. in classic FA Cup final time has been chosen by Jonathan Wilson, who'll be on Monday's pod. And Jonathan Wilson has chosen the 1973 FA Cup final between Sunderland and Leeds, a game I know absolutely nothing about. So we'll watch that at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon if you have nothing to do.
Is that true, Max? Do you really know nothing about it?
Well, I know the score, but I know not a thing about. I mean, I can sort of have a guess that Leeds were favourites and that was a classic Leeds side, but yeah, it's right. I don't know enough about it. So I'm interested with that. Obviously, it's the FA Cup final, so coverage will start at 8 a.m. Everyone gathered around the telly like the FA Cup final used to be. Finally, Chris says, can we get Barry to read the lyrics to songs again? Capital letters, give the people what they want. Thanks in advance. And Ahmed said, is Barry doing No Diggity? So we will leave you today with Barry Glendening reading No Diggity. Sid, thanks so much for coming on, mate.
It's been a pleasure.
I should just add before I start this that I don't know this song, so apologies in advance. But here we go. A one. One, two, three, four. You know what? I like to play it. No diggity, no doubt. Play on, play it. Play on, play it. Yo, Dre, drop the verse. It's going down, fade to Black Street. The homies got rib, collab creations. Bump like acne, no doubt. I put it down, never slouch. As long as my credit can vouch. A dog couldn't catch my ass out. Tell me who can stop when Dre making moves. Attracting honeys like a magnet, giving them eargasms with my mellow accent. Still moving this flavor with the homies, Blackstreet and Teddy. The original rump shakers, surely get down, good lord, baby got them up open all over town. Strictly biz, she don't play around, cover much ground, got game by the pound. Getting paid is her forte, each and every day, true player airway. I can't get her out of my mind. I think about the girl all the time. East side to the west side. Pushing fat rides. It's no surprise. She's got tricks in the stash. Stacking up the cash. Fast when it comes to the gas. By no means average. She's on when she's got to have it. Baby, you're a perfect 10. I want to get in. Can I get down so I can win? I like the way you work it. No diggity. I got to bag it up. Bag it up. I like the way you work it. No diggity. I got to bag it up. Bag it up. I like the way you work it. No diggity. I got to bag it up. Bag it up. I like the way you work it. No diggity. I got to bag it up.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.